I'm Michael.
And I am Nolan.
And you're listening to It's Good to Be a Man Uncut Volume 1. This is a unedited show where we shoot the breeze about news and other items that we weren't able to get to in our standard episodes. So what are some of the topics we're going to be covering today, Nolan?
Well, the first thing that we should probably talk about, I guess, is Harris and purity culture and the difficulty of courtship in a father's age. And then I've got some thoughts on feminist tropes in film, which people might find interesting. And if we get to it, we can talk about Red Pill Wars as well.
And then we went viral, too.
We're
social media power brokers now. So
we are, yeah. I mean, if you would like to know how to go viral, please send $2,500 to It's Good to Be a Man, and we will be in touch.
And we'll tell you about the two times we did it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is where we're going to cut for music and... Now let's talk about Joshua Harris. Who is he? What's purity culture? Difficulty of courtship in a fatherless age. I have lots of thoughts about it. Did Joshua Harris make it all the way over to New Zealand and plague your life as well?
Well, he did actually, although I wouldn't say he plagued my life, because purity culture didn't really make it all the way to New Zealand, at least not in the circles that I was in. But his book made it. And I would say his book actually had a positive influence, because it came at about the time that I was starting to, I had just become a Christian, and I was interested in this Christian girl called Sarah, who ended up being my wife. And I'd say that it did help us to kind of think through a lot of those issues. I'm not sure if we came to the same sorts of positions that he would have, if we came to the same sorts of positions that people in purity culture came to, if we read it the same way that they did. I don't think we probably did, actually.
Yeah, Emily and I were introduced to it, let's see, and I first read the book in I Kissed Dating Goodbye. It was his first big hit, followed up by Boy Meets Girl and then Stop Dating the Church. I did not read Stop Dating the Church, but I did read his first two books. And I was a young man. I was serving as a youth leader / youth pastor and kind of these community Bible studies and two church youth groups. And that book was a trend. It was all the rage. Everyone was reading it. And I wasn't really a big fan of it. I was okay with the morality. Obviously, you should not fornicate. And some of the later chapters on just some practical things to do, I thought were helpful. But my life was very broken. You know, I grew up above a bar with a messed up family and all this. So I didn't really have what he seemed to assume you would need to pull off courtship. But it's kind of funny, since he's apostatized this past week, now he says he's not a Christian at all and all this. There's just been a rage against purity culture. And I made a glancing comment about how purity culture was weird. And a lot of people got up in arms about me even saying something negative about purity culture. I don't think purity is a problem. I'm a Christian, right? God calls us to live chaste lives, live holy lives. But purity culture, I think, is not necessarily the culture that comes from the pursuit of purity. How would you define purity culture? Do you have a way you would come at it?
I'm not really sure, because a lot of what I've seen has just been secondhand. The thing that I took away from Josh Harris's book was really not so much about the culture that you should create as about the problems that he'd seen in the idea of dating and so on, which I found quite helpful. But it seems like the culture that gets created has a lot of weird stigmas attached to it, where it's the word legalistic is sort of overused, but it does have a kind of pharisaicalism to it, or kind of not even pharisaicalism, even a works righteousness to it, where once you fail, that's it, you're out. And if you know, you've got the strong commitment to be pure before marriage, you've got a ring to wear or whatever the case may be, a purity ring, and then you fail, you know, you end up, as teenagers often do, you end up in the moment of passion, and it's like my life is over now. I'm no longer pure. So I'm sort of sullied goods. And it eliminates the concept of repentance from the gospel, which doesn't seem like a really good outcome.
You know, so here's some of my thoughts on it. Okay. So I was in the heart of it. Cincinnati, Ohio is where I was at the time. It's where I met my wife. She's from the east side of town. I'm from southern Indiana, right across the river. And that's a big homeschool sort of center for the Midwest, certainly even the United States. And it was a really big book. And I was introduced to it by a girl who called it the Gospel of Josh. And she would lead this Bible study. And I came to it once or twice. Yeah, we got a woman leading a Bible study. Problematic. But nonetheless, she would always talk about it, how it was this amazing book. And all these kids were really into it. And now this girl that leads the Bible study ends up getting pregnant out of wedlock. And I remember she came and repented to all of us, which, you know, you got to give her credit where credit's due. That takes a lot of gumption. We weren't in a church together, like an official church. It was more like these community Bible studies. So I really appreciated her coming to us. But what I observed in it, it was like basically, and since we're going uncut, this is the uncut volume one. I got to give you some uncut materials. Basically, I saw a bunch of horny teenagers that were just possessed with lust and really, really wanted to have sex. And they were looking for a way to control that lust. They would build up like a fence around it, all this apparatus to keep them from actually having sex outside of marriage without ever dealing with the underlying problem. So they built this whole apparatus. And they never deal with the issue of reordered desires. And so there's this sort of legalism around it. Like, okay, you're not going to end up in the back of a car because you got a purity ring on, right? You're not going to end up like making out with a dude in a movie theater because you had a daddy-daughter dance. But that's not really how – not that those things don't have some sort of value to them and potential, but – What I saw is I saw an incredible amount of people get pregnant out of wedlock, an incredible amount of people fall away. And it's because I think they never got to the underlying issue, which was an issue of properly ordered desires. And so I do think it was a sort of legalism. Now, purity, a call to be sexually chaste, to be sexually immoral, is not legalism. That's good. But they were trying to find a way to just like somehow make it to marriage. Oh, then I'll find the one and then we'll have sex and it'll be amazing. It'll be like the nuclear bomb of sexual satisfaction. And the reality is sex at the start between two virgins is awkward. It's awkward. Mm-hmm. It's not a nuclear explosion. Sex gets better as the years go by. That's the thing that these red pill guys get wrong. These players get wrong. To know how to love a woman sexually and to perfect it takes years and years of practice, because while there's commonality between men and women in terms of what they like, there is a sort of unique particularity that needs to be mastered over time. So what I think it was, it just didn't get to the underlying issue of lust. It tried to build up a culture that didn't get to the actual issue. And it reminds me of the people in the Church of Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2. And so they've got like this kind of outward form, this way of, you know, you're able to find all these false apostles out, but you've lost your first love. I think they didn't get to the actual issue of regeneration, repentance, new life, proper control. And it was a way of trying to use culture to shape and form something that ultimately is spiritual. I don't know. What do you think about that? What's your pushback?
No, I think you're exactly right. It reminds me exactly of Colossians 2, where Paul speaks about this kind of issue in respect to Jewish laws rather than purity culture. But purity culture is doing the same kind of thing. If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why, as if you were still alive in the world, do you submit to regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. And he goes on to say, these have indeed an appearance of wisdom in promoting self-made religion and asceticism and severity to the body, but they are of no value in stopping the indulgence of the flesh.
Yeah. So like Emily and I, we dated, we did not court. We dated for 4.5 years. I do not recommend that. And this was during our late teens, and the hormones were raging, like, you know, like a volcano raging. And, but we feared God, and we did not have sex until we got married. And it was not easy. I started lifting weights a ton. I worked a lot of hours. I took cold showers. I did everything to control my desires. I prayed to the Lord. I sought the Lord. But ultimately, the thing that kept us from fornicating prior to marriage was honestly that we were Christians and we feared God and we didn't want to drag his name through the mud and we wanted to honor him. And we made it. I mean, we crossed the finish line just barely, but we did it. And I think as I look back on it, one, I wouldn't recommend such a long period of courting, dating, but two, if you don't fear God, there's no hope for you. It's just
definitely
whatever barriers you build. It's like guys that are like, you know, guys that put these, they put these filters on their computer so they'll stop looking at porn. I mean, filters on computer, they're road bumps, right? They're speed bumps. They're just a way to slow you down. You can find a way. Porn is everywhere. And if you've got a girlfriend and you don't have your sexual desire under control, there's only these fences, these speed bumps, they can only slow you down, but they will never stop you. And so what I think we're seeing is a lot of unregenerate people who were made promises by a sort of legalistic culture. And since they didn't fear God, those promises were never met. And now they're blaming poor Joshua Harris, who though is a heretic, is getting blamed for all these people having premarital sex. It's kind of messed up in my opinion.
It is pretty messed up. And the point about fearing God is one that we come back to over and over again, because it's so important in so many ways, especially when we're talking to men and especially when talking to young men. I mean, I've seen people on various red pill blogs just kind of ranting about how the church has done them wrong by forbidding masturbation and how that's not on and they're going to do whatever they want and so on. They're claiming to be Christians. But I mean, they're just raging against God.
I had a lot of guys on my Twitter a couple of months ago that kept trying to say that masturbation and pornography was okay. And so I decided to engage in the argument because, honestly, from a quote-unquote Christian perspective, I'd never dealt with that argument before. I was used to non-Christians making that sort of argument, but it was new to me to have Christians trying to argue it's okay to masturbate and to look at pornography. And as I listened to him, the thing that really stood out to me was I honestly became to sympathize with them because they struck me as people that are just living in a pornographic society. And they're in churches that had not probably discipled them well, probably coming from broken families. And a lot of the tools it takes to live a faithful life hadn't been provided to them. And they're like, oh, I want to be pure. I want to wait until marriage. And the only way I can do it is by, you know, masturbating to, you know, porn. And you think these people are kind of tortured. And you want to tell them like, no, that's gross. That's wrong. That's porneia. That's what that is. You self-pleasure is not the proper use of your penis. It's meant to go into a woman. But at the same time, I couldn't help but sympathize with them at some level.
Yeah. I mean, they've been handed the plans to a house and told to go build it, but no one gave them a hammer and a saw.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I don't know. I mean, look, the argument's a pretty simple argument. If lust happens in the heart, it doesn't, if you look at a woman, whether it's a digital woman or a physical woman, still the lust is happening in the heart.
A made up woman.
Made up woman. That's right. You imagine her in your head. You close your eyes and you imagine her. She's not pixel. She's not refracted light. She's this imagination that's occurring in your brain. That still would be a sin according to Christ, you know? So the other thing I want to talk about courtship just for a moment is that I am not anti courtship. Now I'm not the world's biggest friend of courtship either. And the reason is that I think courtship is a good idea for certain cultures. But our culture where there are no fathers and fathers, I mean, what do you do when you're in a situation like I was, where my father-in-law, who's a good man by non-Christian standards, was fine with us shacking up as long as my wife finished college and we didn't get pregnant. You know what I mean? I mean, that's a real common situation. Or we have all these sort of Barney Fife dads that who have not ruled their household well. And now this young Christian guy comes and he wants to take their daughter away and marry them. And suddenly they become what we call an AMOG, alpha male of the group. This guy is like, now he's going to puff out his chest and he's going to like scare all these
guys. Yeah, these are the guys that share those ridiculous lists of things that guys, that quarters of their daughters are going to have to deal with, you know, the stupid rules they have to follow and the terrible consequences and how they've got lots of space out the backyard to bury a body and all this kind of bullshit.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, and there's the first uncult. He said it, not me. But I'll tell you right now that if a good guy comes to my house, you know, I'm not going to scare him away with a shotgun. Why in the world would I scare a decent suitor away from my daughter with a shotgun? That's macho bullcrap. Save it for someone else. I want the best man I can get for my daughter. Now, if some dude shows up and I've never heard his name, I don't know who he is, and he says, Mr. Foster, I would like to date your daughter. And I'll say, who are you? What's your name? You know, what? Who? Well, my name's like this, and my name's Jason, and I would like to date Galilee. Look, Galilee's never...
Let's get to know each other, man.
Galilee's never said your name to me once. I don't know who you are, and my daughter clearly doesn't care about you too much. When I start hearing your name more, we can talk. But this whole idea that a young man would come to my house that my daughter hasn't talked about and wants me to give him my stamp of approval, the 18 years I've invested into discipling my daughter, and he wants me to lend my credibility to his pursuit of my daughter and she's never talked to him before? Absolutely not. Never going to do it. I want him to actually pursue my daughter a little bit before he pursues me. I'm not offended by it. If Galilee ends up in the back of a car seat, back of a car on her first date, that's my fault. I've had 18 years to disciple her. I don't think my daughters are going to be that easy. And if they are, it's a reflection of my parenting. So I think, I'd let this guy, I don't mind him talking to my daughter, but I certainly am not going to let some stranger court my daughter with my approval. Never.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because my daughter seems to be of the opinion that I'm going to go out and actually find a suitor for her and just kind of present him to her. And I had to explain to her that most likely the best way for her to find a man would be for her to find a man that I could then get to know, and we'd make a decision jointly. It wouldn't just be me going and going to the man mall and locating a suitable specimen.
You would go, and if the guy comes out and fills your gas up 7 times, and you know he's the one.
That's right.
Your servant Eliezer. You know, just an interesting thought on all this is that I was reading someone's posting on Twitter, and I think men are the pursuers in a sense; they're active, but girls are not passive in the whole dating dance. Right. They bat their eyes, they show their interests. And I think we should encourage our daughters, hey, when you see a good man, you let him know that don't play hard to get totally. Let him know you're on the market. Let him know you're interested. My goodness, don't lose them. They're so few and far between.
It's actually definitely a very good point, because a lot of men who are of the courtship mindset when they have daughters, somehow their daughters pick up from them. I don't know if they teach them this, but their daughters pick up from them that it's really the man's job to pursue. And she's sort of just there to sit there and pretend like nothing's happening, which unless the guy is really high quality or really invested, is just going to make him go, oh, okay, well, you're not interested. I'll go somewhere else. A woman has to respond. That's the whole point of a woman, is that the man initiates and the woman responds.
It's a dance, right? So we were watching, it was some show. It's on Netflix. It's like their new Planet Earth they had on. But they have, you know, it's like heavy, like evolution, brainwashing sort of stuff. But there is one episode where these birds do these like crazy dances. And what I like about it is the birds, like, they do all these crazy dances, and then the girl bird flies over and takes off with them, right? She responds.
Sure.
And I was just thinking, like, look, there's these sort of mating dances, these sort of courting, dating dances. But the woman's got to be willing to dance. It takes two to tango. There has to be some sort of willingness. And I used to tell girls at my former church, I said, look, bat your eyes at a guy if he's trying. If you think he's good, you think there's some potential, you know, show him that you're somewhat interested. Give him some feedback, for goodness sake. He's putting himself out there. And let them know you're interested. And so what I've noticed with a lot of courtship families is the girls can be kind of cruel, and they can use their father as this sort of tool to crush their suitors. It's not good. But that's,
it becomes very combative. There's this kind of agonistic relationship where the man has to defeat the father like a prince defeating a dragon before he can rescue the damsel.
Well, yeah, and the flip side of it is the father ends up, if the father emasculates the man, right, takes away his manhood, his manliness, if the guy has to lay down his manhood to get that guy's daughter, well, then that daughter is getting an emasculated man. So everybody loses in that situation. The man loses his manhood, the father loses a solid son-in-law, and the woman's going to get some guy that's just served up his testicles on a plate. You know, that's not good at all. All right, enough about heresy. Well, heresy, they go together now. But enough about that. Let's talk about feminist tropes being advanced in film. So you had kind of a unique idea that I hadn't really thought about. And why don't you explain it?
Oh, I don't know. I want to say it's a new, unique idea. That's just not true.
Unique to me. I hadn't thought of, I had not had deep thoughts about this before.
Yeah, fair enough. No, I watched Jonathan Pajot. I wouldn't necessarily recommend watching him, but he's a very interesting fellow, and he had a few ideas which I kind of put together. Obviously, in film, feminists have been active for a very long time, and I think actually quite a lot longer than a lot of people give credit for. They tend to think of the 80s as being the time that women really started to be pushed as, you know, action heroes and that kind of thing, and that's true, but feminism has been going on for a lot longer than that. But if you look at the 80s, you've got this idea of women taking on men's roles, or as Pedro would say, putting female bodies on masculine ideals. So you've got, you know, Ripley in Alien is the classic example. She's basically a male action hero. She has some unique characteristics in that she's a woman. They do play on some of her femininity, but essentially she's a masculine action hero. She just happens to have a woman's body. And that's been going on for quite a long time now. I mean, the 80s was a long time ago, and you've had Buffy, and you've had Wonder Woman, and you've had Kill Bill, and you've had anyone played by Michelle Rodriguez, and so on. But more recently, I've been noticing this trend. You've been noticing this as well. We just put it in these terms before, where women are kind of taking over from male heroes. So it's not enough that women can assume the male role. It's almost like you have to validate them further by taking an existing male role and then handing it to the woman herself. So Ghostbusters and Ocean's 8 were pretty controversial and well-known examples. And neither of them succeeded very well, interestingly. But you also have a kind of more subtle, I don't know if it's subtle, might not be the way to say it, but you have, in some respects, a more subtle way of doing this. Which is where, instead of taking just a franchise and sort of rebooting it with women, you have men in a franchise who then handle their mantle over to be superseded by a woman. And in some cases, it's a full franchise. In some cases, it's just kind of a universe. A good example is Logan. Logan is a really overt kind of example of it, because the whole movie is really about this. You've got this kind of old, washed-up Logan who's sick and dying and can't be a cool action hero anymore. And then you've got this young clone of him who's a female. And essentially the whole movie is him coming to realize that he has to sacrifice his life in order to allow her to go on and take his place. And not necessarily I'm always hesitant to make these kinds of comments, because I don't want to discourage people from watching Logan necessarily. I think Logan is potentially, for some people, a really good movie to watch. It's really has a lot going for it in terms of the way that it's made, and it's
I enjoyed it. I mean, it's sort of a Marvel,
exactly right, it's enjoyable.
It was a Marvel Western sort of thing going on, and I didn't
exactly. And it does have a lot of Western characteristics, and Westerns are often very masculine.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd say that Westerns are the last bastion of masculinity, although they are starting to fall now.
Logan is like Unforgiven. If at the end, instead of Clint Eastwood going in and shooting up little Bill, Clint Eastwood hands off his gun to some daughter.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So, yeah. I enjoyed it. And I thought the girl actress, she was quite good, but it was exactly what you're describing.
And you see the same thing with Fury Road, Mad Max Fury Road, where at the end, what's her name? Furiosa gets raised up on the platform with all these other women, and Max kind of just disappears into the crowd and gives her a nod as if to say, right, it's your turn. You're the one who's rising up. You know, the future is women and the future is female, and I need to disappear now. And we've got from all appearances with Thor, Love and Thunder, we've got the same thing going on where Natalie Portman is going to start becoming Thor. She's going to wield the hammer and take on that role. And that's obviously something that's coming from the comics. The comics have been way ahead of movies in many respects when it comes to gender bending. And also we saw the trailer for Top Gun recently, and our prediction is that he's going to be replaced by a woman in that. We will see.
The best thing that happened to the Thor franchise was getting rid of Natalie Portman. I mean, she was just...
And now they're bringing her back.
Yeah, it was... She was. The Ragnarok, or whatever you call it, was actually quite good because she wasn't in it. But what's up with Chris Hemsworth, man? Chris Hemsworth is like... He's like this gigantic beast of a man that he pretends to be beta... and blue pill so he can make money. I highly doubt in real life that's how he operates, but
I don't know. I think in real life he is actually conditioned into a beta blue pill mindset. I think in real life he is the masculine equivalent of the blonde bimbo.
I think maybe he is.
That's how far we've managed to flip gender roles in our society. And he truly believes that women are better than men and that they should be taking on these roles and so on. And I think that there has to be a huge amount of cognitive dissonance going on there, but that's what's happening.
It certainly stands out in all the roles he's picking. And I mean, there's a really good a YouTube video on Charisma on Command where it shows how Chris Hemsworth is trying to help Brie Larson in an interview. And Brie Larson has zero charisma. The chick is just like,
oh man, she's a black hole of charisma. Yeah,
she really is. And you can tell he's trying there, and it's clear that he actually is socially sophisticated. You watch that video.
He has an enormous amount of, I mean, I hesitate to use the word gravitas because I don't think he actually has gravitas. I think he's a kind of
charismatic
facsimile of gravitas, which comes from just being charismatic and funny.
Yeah, he's just
understanding social dynamics and knowing that other people can look better in his halo.
He's like Justin Timberlake. You don't want to like him, but there's something naturally likable about them. But I watch it and I think, is this guy basically whoring himself out to feminism for money? I don't know. Maybe he really is conditioned in it. I can't tell. Anyway, moving right along with your point.
Well, that's kind of the middle ground where men are handing over the role to women. But we also have this quite interesting, I don't know, I wouldn't call it necessarily the pinnacle, having thought about it more. I'm not sure if it's actually a progression per se or if it's just kind of points on a triangle. But you also have this idea of women as the pinnacle of humanity. So I've mentioned the future is female. But more recently, we're seeing women taking command without men's permission or against men's desires to basically solve the problems that men have caused. And you see that in Moana very obviously. Moana is basically having to fix the problem that Maui caused. And Maui in the story essentially serves as a foil to her the whole way, never actually doing anything useful. He's sort of this comical version of the patriarchy. And the fifth element, maybe is the earliest one that I can think of where this is really obvious, where the perfect human being is, I don't know if she's made to be human, the perfect being is this woman, Lilu, who is strangely dressed in an extremely revealing outfit. But then The Last Jedi was a very clear example of this with Admiral Holdo, where most of the action in the movie is driven by the fact that Holdo just has this kind of higher wisdom that she doesn't deign to share with the men. And so the men go off and try to do all these destructive things to solve the problems, where Holdo already has a plan. And of course, Holdo has to sacrifice herself for everyone because of the men. Speaking back of Chris Hemsworth, in Thor Ragnarok, you've got a similar kind of thing where at the end he hands his rulership off to Valkyrie, and in Endgame he's essentially abdicated the rulership of the kingdom, and not that the kingdom is much anymore, but he's sitting there playing video games while Valkyrie actually gets the job done.
That's right. Yeah, I am. So why should we care? So what?
Why should we care? I think the main reason we should care is that in many of the films that this is happening, they are being enthusiastically received, not just by the world, but by conservative evangelical Christians. Conservative evangelical Christians love Moana. They love Marvel movies. They probably saw some issues with The Last Jedi, and that movie just overplayed its hand. But on the whole, there is this mindset, and I think it goes back to the idea that women are the glory of man. There's this mindset where we've confused the glory of man with the glory of God. We want to be celebrating women. We want to be raising women up above ourselves. That's what men do. We know that when Paul says that women are the glory of man, he means that when you think about mankind, the thing that you most want to celebrate is not the men, it's the women, because they're the most beautiful. They're the kind of pinnacle of creation. And I don't say this in some kind of Gaia worshipping way. I say this in the sense that God gave Adam a beautiful wife to glorify. As he went out into the world, he would do it for her. He would do it for God, and he would do it for her. She was the kind of the impetus that he needed. It was not good for the man to be alone. He'd sit there drinking beer and getting fat. So he goes out into the world in order to build a home for his wife and then for his family. And so we want to build up women. We want to raise up women. This is where the white knighting mindset comes from. It doesn't come from nowhere. It's not just this magical thing that happened with feminism. Feminism happened because of white knighting, and white knighting happened because women are the glory of men. And since we've confused that whole category now, and the only way we can think of, since even before the 80s, but especially with the 80s, with when it comes to action movies, the only way we can think of to validate women, to raise up women, to celebrate women, is to just make them honorary men. We have now got to the point where everyone wants to celebrate women as honorary men, and they're doing it through film, and that's going to have film is just a reflection of culture. So it reinforces culture, and it reflects culture.
Well, that has me thinking about something Andrew Sandilin was saying just the other day. He was talking about a guy named Evan Runner, who I don't know who that is, but he said Evan Runner once observed that if we concentrate only on ecclesiastical battles and forget about the culture, we lose the culture, and having lost the culture, we also lose the church. And then Sandilin says, but there's no doubt that the purity and peace of the church is worth fighting for. Yet, if we lose the culture, the church will neither be pure nor peaceful. It will, in fact, be nothing at all. And I'm still, like, meditating on exactly what that even means. But
I'm a little skeptical. I want to push back on him. Because
yeah, so do I. Because I think culture, I think the church leads the culture, honestly.
Yeah, culture is downstream from religion, not upstream.
That's right. And now is there a relationship? There's undoubtedly a relationship between the host culture and the church. And Lord willing, a holy culture would be emanating from the church, and salt and light taking more and more ground. That's what I believe we should be seeing. I don't know. So that's not the reason we should be concerned. We should be concerned because Christians are consuming this. And it's like birds. Some birds have like the ability to eat something that's poisonous, and they've been eating little bits of it their whole life, birds or some other animal, right? They've been conditioned to it. They have the ability to digest it and spit out and take out the good stuff and spit out the bad stuff. But Christians have not been taught a doctrine of the body, a doctrine of anthropology, a doctrine of sexuality, let alone a bunch of other doctrines. And they're being fed these things and they have no discernment, and it immediately corrupts them. It's the water they swim in, the air they breathe now, and they have no immune system for it. I don't know.
Yeah. They're the frog boiling in the pot.
And the pot is a bunch of feminist nonsense.
Unfortunately.
Did you see Captain Marvel?
I did. I watched it not because I wanted to, but because there are some movies that are so kind of overtly related to what we do that I feel that if I don't watch them, I will be in some way abdicating my own responsibility in teaching others, basically.
So I can't give you a hard time about watching Captain Marvel because I haven't watched Captain Marvel, but I have read an article about Captain Marvel in Cosmo magazine.
How did you get hold of a Cosmo magazine?
Well, so what was fascinating in the Cosmo magazine is they were talking about how, you know, in the upcoming phase of the Marvel movies, how it's basically all this woke nonsense. And they were talking about how there wasn't an official lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender character, but they hinted at it at the end of Avenger Endgame with Captain Marvel's haircut. And I was like, now look at that. Cosmo is being more honest about the correlation between hair length and a person's sexuality than the church ever could be.
That's really interesting.
It was a fascinating article. And I was like, yeah, that's the, lots of lesbians are like, let's shed that long hair and get this, you know, short hair. And, but I don't think very many pastors could preach that, but Cosmo did. And everyone, you know, were like, yep, it's true. She's looking like a lesbian. So, well,
it's a really strange give and take between the church and culture in terms of who's honest about what. The way that culture can be honest about some things, but it refuses just to be honest about other things. And the church can be honest about those things, but not the things the culture is honest about, like hair length and that kind of thing.
Well, radical second wave feminists are always honest about what's up. So if you read like Shulamith Firestone, if you read, what's her name? Well, Simone Bouvier, that's a little earlier. Is that how you say her name? I can't remember. Anyway, but what's the other one that wrote, I can't think of her name, Betty Friedan. If you read them, they're always really honest about, like Shulamith Firestone talks about how the problem with a woman is that she has a womb and she can, and as long as she's chained to her womb, she can never have equality with a man. In other words, she has to unsex herself like Lady Macbeth or something. Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's but you can never get a complementarian, egalitarian Christian or so-called Christian to say that. But, that's why I actually enjoy reading the radical feminists. I mean, it's disgusting, but at least they're honest and we're with,
yeah, that's right. At least you have a clear idea of what they're saying.
Yeah. We're with an evangelical feminist. They're constantly twisting scripture where, you know, take someone like Mary Daly. Mary Daly would just say, no, scripture is wrong. Paul was misogynist. Scripture is, you know, unforgivably patriarchal. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. And so you're like, yeah, they actually read the Bible and caught what it was saying.
You know? Yeah, that's right. They understood it at a basic level.
They actually got it. There was a sort of academic honesty there that is not present in their evangelical counterparts so often. Mm. You know? Well, another thing that I've noticed on Twitter, which is where I'm pretty active these days in social media, is there's been a sort of, I would call them red pill wars is what I was thinking about. You know, I follow a lot of these guys, or a lot of the people who follow me follow these guys. So anytime they like or heart something they say, it ends up appearing in my feed. And so, you know, whether it's Rollo Tomasi or the one guy's, what's his name? Something, Alexander Cortez, some of these guys are, the other guys like Cobra Tate, Andrew Tate, I think his name is. And so, and a friend of mine, George Bruno, I'm watching these conversations happen. There's kind of been a big old break in the world of Red Pill. And it started back with this 21 convention, which is this big convention that these guys put on. And the guys like Rich Cooper, Rollo Tomasi were into it. And then there's some sort of divide where they weren't part of it anymore. And it was kind of the, I guess, the more of the earlier speakers at the 21 convention were sticking with it. And those guys were going their own way. And what's fascinating is, from what I can tell, a lot of this divide came from their patriarchy or patriarch version of the 21 convention, where they were really pro fatherhood, family, and to some extent marriage. And that was that caused a split. And so what I'm noticing happening in sort of the red pill world is guys that it kind of moves from guys that are awkward and want to get a woman in bed. And then those guys eventually realize how easy sex is to get. A lot of those guys do. It's not that hard. And then they want something more. And so what I have always thought is that red pills really failed with what's next. Red pills, like the 101 class, 101 sexuality. Here's how basic desires work in men and women, you know. But in terms of purpose and application and all that, they really don't have a 201, a 301, a 401. And so it seems like there's a massive break. And I think it's for the good, because we're kind of in that world. We're kind of not. We're like, we're Christians and we're conversant with it. And we follow and talk to some of these people. But I think it's a good thing that's happening right now. And, you know, you're watching guys like Roosh. Roosh is hanging out with E. Michael Jones. It's like some bizarre. It's like a bizarro world. I've been reading E. Michael Jones.
No one could, if you had told me that was going to happen, I would have just been like, nah, it's bullshit.
I used to have to be quiet about my E. Michael Jones devotion. I've been reading E. Michael Jones now for 15 years. And he's, you know, one is I'm Jewish and he's not a fan of the Jews, at least of Jewish culture. But his writings on sexuality have always been just fascinating to me. And Cultural Wars magazine is really good. But I came into the world of Roosh 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And there's just no way I would have ever thought that this sort of alt-right pickup artist was going to become this devoted sort of he's last I read or heard, he was going into the Greek Orthodox Church. Given the video I watched the other day, I'd be really surprised if he doesn't end up Roman Catholic. But so there's all this sort of breakdown and these guys that actually want families and want children, and a lot of the kind of early red pill guys have nothing to offer. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I think Rude's a really interesting example, because you mentioned how he's going to go Roman Catholic. And in a sense, Roman Catholic is as far as you can go the other way from the kind of chaos of just raw sexuality and doing whatever you want, the kind of standard red pill thing where there is no morality. It's, as Rollo would say, it's just meant to be descriptive, never prescriptive. It's a praxeology. There's no normativity involved. It's just about how we are. And I mean, we've tried to talk to Rollo about that and it didn't turn out very successfully because the man just appears to not understand his own presuppositions. But when you look at the way that red pill guys are seeing the complete absurdity of that, they're looking into the abyss and they're saying, I don't want to go there. And they turn around, they run the other way. And as you often get, overcorrect and end up in something like Catholicism, because Catholicism has this kind of deep historical, supposed historical connection and heritage and these very rigid liturgies and rituals and methods for dealing with sin, which they obviously have a huge weight of. And it's kind of sad in one sense because, you know, Catholicism ultimately, unless you're a very bad Catholic, isn't any better than just jumping into the abyss directly. But on the other hand, it does reveal the problem with the red pill, what's going on there in terms of the mentality and what they see as the solution just kind of instinctively. So it gives you hope that there are a lot of red pill men who would respond to the gospel and would be persuaded by not a high liturgy, but by an understanding that Christianity has the kinds of answers that they're looking for. It has a structure for the world that not only deals with their sin, but also deals with their need for order.
Yeah. And what's concerning to me is obviously, you know, we're Protestants and unashamedly Protestant. We're not going to be changing that position anytime. There's a lot we have in common with the Roman Catholic Church. We all pull from very similar sources, but there's some significant differences. The thing that the Roman Catholic Church has at some level that the Protestant Church at present doesn't have is just a doctrine of the body, right? I mean, the Protestants at the particular moment that we live in have fallen to Gnosticism, where they value the spiritual, what they imagine is the spiritual, over matter or the physical. And so they have a sort of disregard for biological nature, for things made of stuff. And sometimes it's overt, but often it's much more implicit in the positions they take. And so a lot of these guys, like Bruce, are looking at the Protestant church, and they're not seeing a real answer to the chaos that they have been part of and that they see across the entire West. And so it's just a reason where the church has to sharpen its doctrine, rethink through, re-articulate its doctrine of sexuality and what it means to be male, female, what it means to be incarnated, what it means to be flesh, to be human, to be a spirit-body composite. And there hasn't been a lot of thought put into that. And they misunderstand so as an evangelical, we care deeply about being born again, being regenerated, all that stuff. But being born again doesn't negate the importance of physicality. Quite the opposite. Being born again means you now your members, your body, are no longer slaves of sin, but your body is a slave of righteousness. So now you use your body to do God's will, as opposed to using your body not to do God's will, to live a life of disorder and chaos. And so I look at guys like Roosh and the Red Pill guys that are out there looking for deeper meaning, order, a sort of worldview that makes sense of the truth that they know, but also fills the gaps that they are trying to resolve. And sadly, the church on whole, the Protestant church, doesn't have an answer. And, you know,
I mean, there's so many ways it doesn't have an answer. It's not even just sexuality. It's the whole gamut of theology at this point. People like Roosh, coming out of where they are, they're looking for rules. They're looking for real guidelines that people will actually enforce. And on paper, the Catholic Church looks like a great place for that, because ultimately it is very legalistic. But, I mean, we all know in practice, most Catholic churches are not like that. And most Catholics are just as secular as anyone else. But on paper, the Catholic Church looks great. Whereas even on paper, Protestantism, you ask an evangelical pastor, you know, is birth control wrong? And he'd be like, you know, it's fine, whatever. It's wonderful to be able to use birth control. He's not going to give you any kind of rules. He's not going to say, well, here's where it's right and here's where it's wrong and this is why. And you look for church discipline. You're not going to find church discipline in just about all the churches that people are going to be looking in. You walk into your typical evangelical church, pastor's just up there up the front on Sunday, and that's kind of all he does, really. So if you're looking for something that really gives you the kind of structure that you want, then it's really natural that you're going to be looking at these institutions that, at least on paper, still have the appearance of providing rule and structure.
Exactly. I mean, basically, the whole West has fallen to evangelifishism. Everything,
yeah.
There's everything subjective. There's no borders. There's no appeals to nature. There's no appeals to objectivity at all. Everything's very postmodern and wishy-washy, you know, fuzzy wuzzy was a god sort of nonsense. And so, like, there's Gnosticism, there's antinomianism, the whole thing's a mess right now. Yet the Lord is faithful. First off, America and the West is not the whole of the world. God is working in his church in Africa and China and elsewhere. But we shouldn't soft sell the problems. The problems are significant. And Protestants, I see good things, you know, in my little corner on Twitter and Facebook and in my little circles, I see some good things happening, but, But I think the pastors that grew up in a earlier, you know, these baby boomer sort of Gen X pastors, I think they're a little disconnected at some level from the chaos that is reigning in society right now. And they're losing young men. And
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So
there's a kind of uprising happening in evangelicalism against the baby boomer leader generation. They just I don't know how many, but there's a significant cohort of mostly younger men, our age, younger, slightly older, who see the hypocrisy of it all and recognize that evangelicalism has become an institution and that people are trying to preserve the institution rather than trying to preserve the house of God. And when, as soon as you've confused the institution for the house, you've got a huge problem, and that institution is going to get torn down by God at some point.
And I think guys like Aaron Wren are putting their finger right on these things. You know, Aaron's brought up the generational issue, and there's things that we need to give great thought to. Now, that is a great segue for this whole, these viral tweets. I had a tweet that I sent out that is, I think it's my most viral tweet I've ever had. 6,400 retweets, 15,000 likes. So I put, I remember talking at work about how happy I was with my wife. And my coworker goes, "How long have you been married?" 3 years. Ha! Just wait until you've been married 10 years. It'll suck. Maybe, or maybe you suck at marriage. We'll see. So then 16 years later, you know, I'm still happy, no regrets. This guy was such a punk, man. This guy, I worked with him at a law firm, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky, he's like, "Oh, it's so bright, I can't see." And if there was clouds in the sky, he's like, "Oh, I wish it was a sunny day." You know, the guy just never was happy. He's like Eeyore from
Puddle Glum.
Right. Yeah, right. And so that's the one I share. That one, you know, it's getting a lot of traffic. And then the other one was on our Facebook page, where it's this truck wrecks, and these guys come and turn this truck over and get this guy out of the truck, and you know, it's all dramatic. And we put on it, "The world needs men of strength, ability, and virtue. It's a wreck without them." Right. So so that thing's been shared, like, it's been viewed, the reach is almost 500,000 people. And so as I looked at these things, I thought, what do these things have in common? And I was thinking about it, and I asked you what you thought. Do you remember what you said to me, what they had in common?
Basically, I said that they're aspirational and that they're not lying about reality by pretending that it's worse than it is. People can see themselves in it.
Yeah. I think there's something constructive and positive about it. And I hate... There's Christian music stations in America suck. They may suck in New Zealand. I don't know if they do or not.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So in Cincinnati, there's one called K-Love, and I think it's K-Love. Positive and encouraging, K-Love. It's always positive and encouraging, right? And my life is full of a lot of struggle and difficulty, and positive and encouraging, like always on blast, will wear me down. Yeah. But at the same time, I do think we're at a time where men are constantly being pissed on, where men are constantly, people are just tearing into men. The culture hates men. They tear into men. And marriage is being teared into a lot. Constantly. Marriage is just, it's, everyone's going to divorce. The divorce rate's 50% here and 70% there. And it's the same in the church. And so I think what people are looking for is some hope. Something more positive. And one thing that we're trying to do, and it's good to be a man, is not just talk about the horrors of feminism and the failures of effeminate men. That's not, those things we have to talk about. There's no way we can avoid them as we try to put forth the biblical sexuality, even if we're just focusing on it from the masculine end. At the same time, I think there's a lot of people that just need encouragement.
Definitely. I mean, that tweet that you share, that guy that said, "Oh, wait until it's been 10 years, it'll suck." It was almost like a scene out of some comedy somewhere. You could put a laugh track to it and stick it into a comedy, and it would be a perfectly accepted, normal thing.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Everyone just knows marriage is so terrible, and the husband's always a buffoon, and the wife is always a nagging harpy, or whatever the case may be.
Just wait till your kids are teenagers. You'll see kids are terrible. You know. As soon as you get married, your sex life is it'll be nothing. She'll always have headaches. You know. Actually, maybe you're bad at marriage. Maybe you're not a good lover, and maybe you're a sucky parent. That's a possibility. Maybe you're not good at these things. And so I just think as I listen to the conversations out there on a lot of things, I don't want to be a Pollyanna, irritating, K-love, positive and encouraging sort of cotton candy Christianity nonsense. At the same time, like, God honors his design. God has made men to push cars over and save people and to rush in. I don't know if you saw this story. These, I think it was four brothers. They swam out to save this little girl. This little girl got swept away in a current, and she was like half a mile out. And the father started to swim to get her, and he couldn't make it. So these brothers swam out together, all four of them. I think they're brothers, maybe they're cousins, but they swam out and they each grabbed the little girl and swam with her for a time on her back. And then they would hand her off to the other brother. And so they swim back and they save this little girl. And then they bring the father back in too. And I just think, yeah, that's what we were made to do. We destroy enemies. We save the innocents. We build culture. We go home, eat a steak, make love to our wife, sleep well, wake up the next day and do it again. That's what it means to be a man. And I'd like to hear that from the pulpit more. I'd like to hear that from more Christians, like that this is what God made in the garden was good, right? Our violence, our danger seeking, our risk taking, our testosterone, our aggression, our love of conquest, all these things, when they're done for God's glory, are good. And so I just think there's a positivity that's missing in a lot of the conversations. It's more like, oh, you're a screw up. You just need a man up more. You just need a man up.
Yeah. And I think also part of what's going on there is in both of the things that you shared that went viral, it wasn't just that they were positive. It was that they showed that men can take responsibility to achieve positive outcomes. So the guy who's like, oh, you know, wait till 10 years, it'll suck. He's treating it as if it were inevitable, as if you're just this victim of fate, and fate has decreed that marriages are going to suck. And so there's nothing you can do, and you might as well just accept it. And that's the opposite of the masculine way of doing things. A man hears it's going to suck, and he's like, no, it's not. I'm going to make sure it's going to be awesome. And that's what men need to hear. You know, stop assuming your marriage is going to be terrible. It's not just a case of man up. It's a case of here's how to take responsibility. People who have sucky marriages probably married the wrong person. There are reasons for these things and causes that can be understood. Men have mechanical minds. They want to understand how things work. Okay, so your marriage sucks. Well, what are the reasons? It's not like fate just handed you a crappy marriage.
Yeah. Guys are action oriented. Like, help me understand the problem. Help me what to do. And in the one on our Facebook page, it's men taking action, taking responsibility, diving into it. And I was thinking about, I was telling you this. So right now I'm taking a break from vocational ministry for about a year. And I'm in kind of an awkward position. Not awkward. Well, yeah, it's awkward, but it's also interesting where I'm at a company right now, basically industrial sales, and some of the men at the company who are training me right now were previously underneath my pastoral care. So it's super interesting. These men, I thought they weren't exactly, you know, dynamic when they came to my church, but at work, oh, watch out. These guys, they know their stuff. They're quick-witted. They're on top of it. They're disciplined. They're driven. They've got vision. You know, I've just been blown away. And I honestly, it's been really weird because they're training me to do the work. And at the same time, I feel like inspired. Like, because I'm like their pastor, their former pastor, and I see how they're doing so well. And I'm like, what in the world? Why are these men like this at this business and not like this at my church? if I had this energy, this drive at our church would be, it would be bigger and be full of more men. Why aren't they like
yeah.
that? You know, and I think you and I talked about it a little bit, and part of the reason is simply men don't know what they're supposed to do at church, what their role is, you know?
That's right.
And, you know, it's not action oriented, and that's something we as Christians have to help men see, because God made men. God made men, males, that is, to be in relationship with Him. That's His design. That's His goal. That's where man will find his ultimate fulfillment and satisfaction in worshiping God and no other God besides Him. And we've got to be confident in that and bring that out. Well, any other final thoughts before we sign off?
None from me.
All right, brothers, be on alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, and let all that you do be done in love.